This is Global Patriot Radio.
Hey, welcome to the Vito Esposito Show with Big Al, starring the godfather of Global Patriot Radio, the dawn of dissenting discussion, the Italian infidel himself, Vito Esposito. Him and his hitman, Big Al, are here to whack the leftists, shake down the Democrats, and put out a contract on all the jihadis that are messing with the American family. And if you got what it takes to be a wise guy, you can get made right here on the show by dialing 319-527-6706. So, get ready to go to the mattresses and say, Mamma Mia, no Sharia, because Vito and Big Al are going to give you a radio show you can't refuse.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
With liberty and justice for all. Good evening, Global Patriots. You're listening to Global Patriot Radio, the Vito Esposito Show. I'm Vito. Our call number tonight and every Global Patriot Radio night is area code 319-527-6706. That's area code 319-527-6706. And I'm joined by that notebook eating American lover, Al. How you doing, Al?
I'm doing fantastic. Great to see you as always. How are you, sir?
I am doing well. It is Monday, November 21. We got, four more days till Thanksgiving, a Turkey Day holiday, where families will gather despite the edict from the authoritarian rule from the federal government. Families are going to get together and have a nice little Thanksgiving Turkey Day.
Maskless and fun.
Maskless and fun. You damn right going to be maskless. Have a little bit of turkey. And yes, we do have turkey on Thanksgiving, not lasagna. That'll be for Christmas.
Eat some turkey, have some adult beverages, which you can't get everywhere, and just enjoy the moment.
Just a little
before they
vino.
Take it away in 2 years when we come up on the new election and we'll have a new pandemic to worry about.
Right. Isn't that the truth, man? Isn't that the freaking truth? Yeah. What will they come up with next? You know?
I don't know, but enjoy the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I apologize. I wasn't able to get the show out on Twitter today except for one. So everybody out there, if hopefully you're tuned in, you have this slotted for 6 p.m. And I see that we got Ducky and Dogs in the chat room. So thanks for joining us this evening. Before I get started, I do want to give a thanks to and a shout out to Annie and Curtis of Southern Sense Talk Radio. Annie, I sat in for Curtis, who had a prior engagement on Friday afternoon. So I sat in for him, and it was a great show. And she had some great guests, including the founder of the Tusk browser, Mr. Jeff Bermont. And that man's a true patriot. If you want a free speech browser, supposed to be, better than DuckDuckGo, certainly give Tusk a shot. And maybe I'd like to see if maybe get Jeff on and talk a little bit more about his browser. It sounds really interesting. So, and then Robert Bork Jr. was on, Robert Bork Jr. is, of course, the son of Judge Bork, Robert Bork, who was Borked by pretty much by bumbling Biden and Ted Kennedy, did not get on the Supreme Court. But Robert Bork told Newsmax that his father would be appalled. Biden is president, and boy, was he right. Bork is junior of Bork Communications Group, and he's an interesting fellow. He wrote a new foreword for his father's book, The Antitrust Paradox, A Policy at War with Itself. He wrote the foreword because it could not get the book. It was out of print, so he brought it back into print. And basically because the lessons involved are repeating through the actions of Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, Pocahontas, and other Democrats. And it was also at the same time that Senator Warren and other Democrats started making noises about rewriting antitrust laws to break up big companies that they don't like. So it was really good. And he was an interesting gentleman. Check out the I did not read the foreword, the new foreword, but it is the book's name is The Antitrust Paradox, A Policy at War with Itself. So then, of course, we got our golf news, PGA news. They were in St. Simon Island, the PGA, for the RSM Classic, which concluded the PGA fall season. Adam Svensson of Canada took charge of the tournament on the back nine on Sunday. He shot a 4-under-31 to win by two strokes over Englishman Colm Tyron. And I'll tell you, this kid had some nails, man. He birdied 16. He birdied 17. He barely got the ball in the cup, but he had a two-shot lead going into 18, and he notched his first PGA Tour victory. So congratulations to Adam Svensson. He ended up the fall season in great style, and it'll be interesting to see what happens at the turn of the year. They open up in January in Hawaii, so it'll be all the past champions for the past year will descend on Kapalua in Hawaii, and then they're over to Wailuakai, I believe it is, the following week, where the whole tour is opened up. So
yeah, well, I tell you this though, just to interrupt for a sec. Adam Svensson, even if you're not a golf fan, has a great story because just for a couple of minutes, his journey involved much more than making a few strokes. He lost his PGA Tour card in 2019. That means he played so bad they took it away. It's like getting demoted in the military, and he was so dejected he almost quit the game. Well, the 28-year-old Canadian stopped relying on his talent. He cut down on his alcohol intake and rededicated himself to matching his ability with hard work. And it paid off, like you said. It paid off winning this tournament, and he'll now qualify for his first invitation to the Masters and earn spots in the Players' Championship and the Century Tournament of Champions. Now, what he did is he treated golf as a job. He was up at 8, ending at 5, practicing and honing his game as if it was work. And he rededicated himself to the task at hand of what he has a natural God-given talent to do. And he took his talent, worked it, and became a great success. So there's a good message in here for everybody, is that when you're down in the dumps and you get kicked in the ass, what do?
You suck it up, Cupcake, and you get back on that horse.
Right. Exactly. So,
you know,
that's
a great – no, that is absolutely great, Al. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I forgot about that, and that's a big thing because he played poorly in 2018, and he ended up having to go back to the Corn Ferry Tour. But you know what? It was enough to wake him up and to the realization that, you know, if he's going to make this a living, he has to treat it that way. And congratulations to him. I mean, just to watch him play, I really, it was enjoyable. Him and Thigala and There were Brian Harmon. Brian Harmon really got, you know, he got pissed on 18 on their approach shot, came up short. He thought he was going to release. I mean, it just goes to show the passion that these guys have. And for Adam Svensson to rededicate himself in the manner he did, I just hope that this doesn't kind of put his guard down a little bit and he just continues to move forward, because that was really, really a great win and an emotional one at that at the end.
Pretty awesome. You're going to disagree with me, but I hope to see Adam Svensson take his win and go to the LIV and earn some real money while he can.
Nah, there's no reason to. He dedicated his life, and he's making money. I mean, you know, not everybody's making money on that tour, so he's not an organically.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
We disagree on this. Bigly.
And speaking of Bigly, we got our big patriot in the chat room, Bigfoot. You can check out Big's blog at www.bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. Great blog spot every day, 7 days a week. Some great stories on there, and I mean a lot of great news articles. And it's not just right wing or has left; it's the world news, and it's a really, he does a great job. So thanks, Big. Let's see. And we got Sue from New Mexico. She's on the switchboard. Hi, Sue. I apologize. I didn't get the show out on Twitter as much today. But LPGA news. They were in Naples, Florida for the final tourney of the year. It was a $2 million purse going to the winner. Entering Saturday's round at the CME Classic, it was Lydia Ko taking a five-shot lead due to her stellar play. And Lydia Ko, she's a 25-year-old phenom. She's been on a tour for like almost 10 years. She found her game again. She looks great. She's got taller. She's skinny, but she's got more powerful. But by the end of Saturday's round, Lydia was tied for the lead. The five-shot lead disappeared. She shot an anemic 2-under-70. In the meantime, Leona Maguire from Ireland just lit it up on Saturday. She shot a 7-under-63. To go into Sunday's round tied with Lydia Ko. The announcers, I'm sure, were having fits because they were absolutely gushing all over, you know, Lydia Ko. I mean, but you know what? To her credit, on Sunday, the 25-year-old Lydia Holzer Ko took charge of the LPGA season-ending tourney to win by two shots over Leona Maguire, who hung in there on Sunday, but Leona only managed to shoot an even par 72. But Ko wins a record LPGA purse of $2 million. She played an incredible four rounds of golf. And aside from, again, from the announcers gushing all over her for 4 days, Ko's play was great, starting out with a 65 on Thursday, a 66 Saturday. And she opened up that five-shot lead. She ended up winning by two shots over Maguire. And she also secured the first player of the year. So she is back on track. I know she's getting used to her new clubs with PXG. She's just incredible to watch. She's just great to watch. Just love it. I don't know if you caught any of that. Yeah, great swing. And speaking of great swings, on a really quick note. So Saturday and Sunday morning, you got up early to go play golf. And beforehand, I took the golf channel on. They had the DP World Tour on. And John Rahm comes out of nowhere on Saturday, absolutely out of nowhere. I mean, he was two or three shots behind. All of a sudden, he's leading the tournament on Saturday. And then Sunday goes in, he's got the lead, and he freaking closes the door. But I got to tell you, Al, there was a shot, and he hit Sunday. I was watching in the morning. I don't know if you caught any of it. But this guy, I am so impressed with John Rahm. I love his game. I love his ball striking ability. This guy hits on the 18th hole. He's got a two shot lead. He hits a driver into the woods in a wooded area, not in the woods, but in a wooded area. He's got pine straw. He's got this little window that he can hit through. Basically, it's a par five. Just punch it out, you know, with his iron talent, you know, just strike it up there. No, Rahm decides that he's going to get it as close to the green as possible. Now, mind you, it's a little bit downhill. There are two creeks that are running split, okay? One creek, the creek makes a left turn about 90 yards out from the green. He's got to carry this from the pine straw, okay, under a tree limb. And he's got to hit it probably about 170, 180 yards easily, okay, but has to keep it low. If he goes too far right, he's in the creek again, okay? He's in the creek that runs right. This guy, maybe it was 205, he hits an iron, just absolutely blisters it, carries the creek by about 5 yards, if that much, and sets up a little 90-yard shot to the green, hits his approach shot to like 18 feet. He two putts, and then I forgot that Matt Fitzpatrick birdied 18. So Rahm won by one shot over Matt Fitzpatrick, England. But it was just so impressive. I mean, to see that on Sunday morning before I'm going to play golf, I mean, what a great impression. But this guy is freaking good. I just absolutely love the guy's play. God. So couldn't tell that.
Yep.
But
he is a talent.
Definitely a talent. And then you got the World Cup that started. So the World Cup is in Qatar this year. So as Al and I were talking before, Qatar paid a boatload of money to bring the World Cup to Qatar in 2022. It started yesterday, November 20th, and it was Qatar was in the opening match against Ecuador, and Ecuador won 2-0. England today trounced Iran 6-2, and I'll tell you, I wouldn't want to be an Iranian soccer player with that kind of loss because the Iranians are on a roll right now, and they're killing anybody and everybody. Netherlands beats Senegal 2-0, and today the USA played Wales, and it ended up with a 1-1 tie. Tomorrow, Argentina plays Saudi Arabia, Denmark versus Tunisia, Mexico versus Poland, and France versus Australia. But that really isn't the big news. The big news is the controversy that's occurring in Qatar. Particularly, the fans are upset because there's no alcohol. Supplies. You're in an Islamic country that believes that alcohol is haram. And people are going, the fans are going crazy because they can't buy their beer.
But even worse, the FIFA, the controlling group, confirmed that alcohol will be banned from the World Cup from the fans at grounds in a major and unprecedented about face just 2 days before the tournament. So all these people spent lots of money, airfare, travel, hotels, thinking that they'll be able to drink at their soccer games or football games. But lo and behold, the Muslim Qataris put a stop on that in the name of Islam and Islamic law. So wake up, you bastards. No beer for you.
And can you imagine Qatar reneges 2 days before the World? It's not like the World Cup Federation FIFA is going to go in and pull the World Cup and move it somewhere else. I mean, Qatar knew exactly what they were doing. They waited until the proper amount of time. All the teams were in Qatar. You had the fans, the majority of fans were rolling in already. And what are you going to do? What is FIFA going to do? I mean, do you continue to trust an Islamic nation? I mean, this is, the Islamic nations want to buy all kinds of sports. And this is the ramifications, and people are shocked. And I got to tell you, Al, the Islamic world has done a great and masterful job to deceive the infidel. And people refuse to understand how Islam works. Now, I'm not saying anything bad about, alcohol. I guess if it was known that alcohol would be banned, only members of the AA would go to watch the games. But overall, for Qatar to pull this little devious act just 2 days prior to the opening of the World Cup is pretty shitty,
Well, this is a great lesson on Islam. Okay. All right, so you're a Muslim. That's a religious choice, right? And
right.
If you're not Muslim, then why You should be able to drink. Now, for a Muslim who chooses not to drink because of their faith, that's fine, too. You don't have to drink. But to force your beliefs on the non-Muslims is an overreach that goes beyond most any other faith or government model in the country. Well, not government, but more faith than anything else. So if the Islamic Qataris were reasonable people, they would say, well, we don't drink, but if you want to, you can, because you're not Muslim. But instead, they want to force their Islamic law on those who don't practice it. And that is a very, very bad and dangerous thing that has not been a part of this conversation. But it should be.
It should be. You will submit. And as a matter of fact, to go further about what Qatar is doing, female fans in Qatar might find themselves in jail if not properly dressed. More information emerges to show why Qatar should have never been awarded the privilege of hosting a FIFA World Cup 2022. It isn't an Islamic World Game event. It's the World Cup, which includes infidels as equals, but not according to Qatar. Infidels who attend must comply with Islamic norms. So far, Qatar is showing itself to be a threat to anyone who attends, from requiring attendees download mandatory spyware onto their cell phones to demanding that gays conform to Sharia. A Saudi Muslim cleric even demanded that FIFA ban players from making the sign of the cross. Now, if that's not intolerance, I don't know what is. And now family attendees might find themselves in jail if not properly dressed. Now, during the games, this is reminiscent of the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is currently experiencing nationwide unrest after the murder of Mahsa Amini by morality police because she wasn't properly covered. And that's a great point, because what does the word properly mean? Does it mean that women have to wear hijabs in the host nation, or they can't wear shorts, what exactly does that mean properly? Qatar's treatment of foreign women is appalling. Five Australian women, among others, are now suing Qatar over forced airport vaginal exams at gunpoint. So they don't have a problem in abusing women, but boy, you better be dressed properly before they abuse you.
Holy mackerel. Well, at least we know one thing. The Qatari camel urine salespeople at the games are very happy, because now they have a lock on the market at these FIFA games. Because you may not know it, but camel urine is a very popular and medicinal drink in Islamic countries, including Qatar.
Huh.
No joke. No joke, man.
Oh, my God. Who actually gathers the camel urine? I mean...
How it's mined, one can only guess. But,
And, you know, and one of the favorite terms for the Brits when they get drunk is to get pissed. So since there's no alcohol, they can have camel urine and they'll still get pissed.
And pissed off. But this is a great example where politics and sports collide. And I'm sure that Hank Jones will be talking about this on his show.
Oh, that's right. Hank Jones, Poly Sports, Wednesday, 5:30. Ahead of Qatar 22, another update has made heads turn. Female fans coming from other countries have been advised to dress properly and not wear anything that is too revealing during the upcoming FIFA World Cup. So, Holger, that would mean that you cannot pull up your top and show your breasts, okay, if you're a woman. If any female fails to comply with this, she can be in big trouble and land herself in jail. It's to be noted that the laws in Qatar ban women from wearing tight clothes, showing their body parts in public. It falls under a punishable offense. So that would mean that in the 100 degree weather of Qatar, you're in the stands, you can't wear shorts because you're showing your body parts, your legs. You can't wear halter tops. I know that's an 80 thing, but, you know, that would show cleavage. And of course, because how unstable the Qatar men are and Sharia compliant, they probably will not be able to control themselves. So interesting to see what happens there. And I, you know, what I found interesting about the Saudi Arabian cleric who made the comment with regards to, excuse me, I hit the wrong screen here. So with the Saudi Arabian cleric who was talking about being properly dressed and making the sign of the cross, there's also the Jewish fans are not above reproach from the Islamic world as well. And there is a slight on anybody coming from Israel with regards to how Qatar will treat them. And if I could find the story, and I apologize because I was in the wrong screen. Here we go. They also have threatened a Danish reporter. So, you know, everybody's open targets for Qatar. Qatari FIFA World Cup officials threatened to destroy Danish reporter's camera while he's live on TV. I mean, think about this. What you said was true. You have Qatar paying a boatload of money to bring the World Cup to their country. Now, you're telling us that you're not aware of the media presence. I mean, this isn't about the Qatar Cup. This isn't about the Islamic Cup. This is about the World Cup. And you have journalists descending on Qatar from all over the world. A Danish reporter, England, Australia, Sky News, I'm sure Sky News Sports. You have United States. You have how many countries are going to be involved? France, Guyana, Senegal, Ecuador. And you take exception to the media who is taking pictures? Danish TV reporter Rasmus Tantholt, while he was reporting live at the World Cup, panel tried to, you have invited the whole world here. Why can't we film? It's a public place. Ah, but there is no public places in Islam, right? But this is not how Islamic supremacist Qatari officials view the matter. Qatar's own ambassador of the FIFA Cup stated that homosexuality is damage in the mind and that they have to accept our rules here. Qatar's ambassador to the UN, Hend Al-Mufta, called Jews our enemies and called down curse to of Allah on homosexuals. So Qatar covered all the bases: alcohol, dress, the Jews, the reporters, and homosexuals. And somehow, with all of the multiculturalism, all the effectiveness of that the world body wants, okay, to disarm the world people and to be the governing body, especially with the LGBTQRSD community, it's somehow okay for Qatar, the host nation of the World Cup, to disparage the Jews, to disparage homosexuals. I mean, this is incredible what we're seeing. And there's absolutely no outcry by the United Nations and the Human Rights Councils, of course, with regards to Qatar's extreme position and how they malign the LGBTQ community, which, of course, now is supposed to be this new off-limits organization. There's no multiculturalism in Qatar, Al.
Forget about it. Qatar, yes, and also the United States, because Muslim groups here are silent as well. Groups like CARE and the Muslim Student Association and the whole laundry list. And they've been awful quiet, too, about this FIFA tournament where you can't drink, women have to be dressed like Muslim women, and no gay hijinks. You can't do any of that stuff that these soccer fans like to do.
No gay hijinks. I guess Baka Barish boys are off limit to the Qataris this week, or the next 10 days. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, the Baka Barish boys are working on a professional level soccer team, but they didn't make it this year, but maybe next.
Maybe next. Well, you know, I'm looking at the press releases for CARE over the last 5 days, and not a word about the World Cup. Nothing. Nothing calling on Qatar to relax and accept all people that are coming, descending on Qatar for the World Cup.
Yep. So if you're aware, Muslim groups here in the United States that are silent on Qatar and are telling you how mild they are and mainstream Islam is, are lying to you. Because if they were speaking truth to power, they would be all over Qatar and blasting their Muslim brethren and Sunni brethren in Qatar. But they are silent because they agree with what they're doing. So all you interfaith people, ask this about your Muslim members and your interfaith interfaith groups, and press them on it. Even talk to your pastors about it and say, hey, this should be a topic for the pulpit to deal with.
Yeah, so there'll be no LGBT flags there, huh? Multicolored flags on the uniforms.
No rainbow gay hijinks there, buddy. Better keep your gay trans cis boys at home where they'll be safe.
That's a good question. So what if there was a trans player on one of the Western teams? Would they be allowed to go in?
I don't know. Are there any women who are posing as men playing? I don't know. That's a great question.
Only Michelle Obama, but she isn't playing, I don't think. sorry, I said that out loud.
That is a great question. I think we'll contact the Qatar press corps and get an answer for you by next week, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Maybe not. And speaking of pardoning, by the way, today was the annual Turkey Pardoning Day at the White House, and the Turkey refused to pardon Biden, and Biden is crying foul, and the Turkey actually hailed from Scranton, Pennsylvania as well. So it's just a historic day. He was interviewing the turkey. I mean, there's a clip that's on Twitter. I mean, how much more of an embarrassment is this old fraud? You know, I mean, he was interviewing somebody, and they said something about 9 million turkeys, and he said something to the effect of he had turkeys in Europe or something. And it's like, what are you even talking about? I mean, the guy is just an absolute embarrassment. Oh my God.
Most people won't be eating turkey because it's so damn expensive. Did you look at the prices of turkeys going into Thanksgiving? 23 to 45% higher.
Yes. Yep.
So many people are going to have to forfeit chicken for turkey. And some people can't even afford that, so they're going to get a tofurkey. And they're not happy about that.
I'll make lasagna before I have a toast turkey or whatever it's called, two-fold turkey.
A tofurkey.
I'll make a lasagna.
It's a real thing.
God almighty. Yeah, like 25. Last year it was 89 cents a pound for a turkey. I saw it for one place. I saw butterballs for $1.89 a pound. That's, double. And then I saw yesterday – I think in Aldi's, they had them on sale for $1.07 a pound. So I guess they weren't moving at the $1.89 a pound, and they dropped them like 60 cents a pound. So, it's pretty bad. I mean, this whole year with the last 21 months has just been one price increase after another. But, hey, breaking news, there was a 5.6 magnitude earthquake that hit Indonesia near the city of Cianjur, which is south of Jakarta, about 50-60 miles south. Right now, the reports are there's 162 people dead and hundreds have been injured, and they are expecting the death toll to climb. So that's really, I mean, that's not that far from Jakarta. I'm sure that they felt the effects in Jakarta, which is heavily populated, but I don't know any type of damage that that it may have occurred. So that's 5.6. They haven't said anything about any aftershocks hitting yet, but magnitude 5.6 is interesting, and I wonder how many volcanoes will start erupting as well after that. But terrified residents fled to the streets, some covered in blood and debris. Many of the dead were public school students who had finished their classes for the day and were taking extra lessons at Islamic schools when they collapsed. West Java Governor Ridwan Kamil said as he announced the latest death toll in remote and rural areas. Hospitals are overwhelmed by injured people, and the death toll was expected to rise further. No estimates were immediately available because of the area's far-flung rural population, but many structures collapsed, and residents and emergency workers braced for the grim news. Buildings were completely flattened, said Dwimi Sarmati, who works for an Islamic education foundation in a neighboring district. Roughly 175,000 people live in the town of Sianjur, part of a mountainous district of the same name with more than 2.5 million people. Known for their piety, the people of Sianjur live mostly in towns of one, two-story buildings and in smaller homes in the surrounding countryside. So more than 13,000 people whose homes were heavily damaged were taken to evacuation centers. So it's more than just hundreds injured. It's wow, this is going to be a mess.
Absolute yeah, 625 mess to count, but I'm sure that that number will be rising. And Israel is one of the first countries to send medical teams to help help these suffering people out. So kudos to Israel, and we pray that the people the death toll stays low and that they survive.
So will the Indonesian government accept the help from Israel, considering that this is an Islamic location and the Jews are never welcomed anywhere? But I mean, they're always the first ones to respond to the humanitarian effort, which is just absolutely incredible.
Every year when there's natural disasters like this, the Israelis are the first to send teams over. They keep the Jewish stars off of things. They don't promote publicly that they're Jewish and from Israel. They accept the help. But the real story is that Israel is providing aid and comfort to Islamic enemies, because Indonesia is 98% Muslim and Islamic, and the Islamic world hates Israel. But that will never get reported. So to the Israelis, it doesn't matter. These are people in need, and people are people, and they need help, and they can give it, and they do. So that's
they
what
do.
Makes Israel, Israel.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, this won't be reported by any world news or anything of that nature. They'll just continue to disparage, and FIFA will ban Jews from coming in or wearing any type of cross going into the World Cup, you know, because it's their way or no
mm-hmm.
way.
Exactly. Great point.
Also on the breaking news, the railroad strike of 2022 has also taken another back step. So you've got Joe Biden and Kamala Harris leading from behind once again, as the largest union rejects the labor deal, which risks the possibility of crippling the rail movement. So America faces a growing risk of crippling national freight rail strike in 2 weeks. The rank and file members of the nation's largest rail union, which represent the industry's conductors, rejected a tentative labor deal with freight railroads, the union announced. The nation's second largest rail union, which represents engineers, ratified its own contract, but the failure of the conductors to ratify their deal is another setback to efforts to avoid a strike. With these votes, all 12 rail unions have now completed their ratification process, with members of 8 of the unions voting in favor of the deals and 4 voting against. The 4 unions that have voted no will remain on the job until at least early next month, with negotiations while negotiations are held and trying to avoid a strike that could cause widespread disruptions in the national in the nation's struggling supply chain and overall economy. Isn't that another potential Biden disaster? We already have a supply chain issue with regards to goods getting into America's hands, getting into supermarket shelves. We have a supply chain issue with diesel fuel shortages in the north, in the northeast, and in the eastern part of the United States. And that's not been talked about. And again, you have the DNC state-run media who continues to sanitize the feckless economic policies of the disastrous Biden-Harris regime. And now it's we're faced with the possibility of a rail strike. I mean, this is one disaster after another with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris regime. We understand about Hurricane Ian and Hurricane Nicole, but did we ever realize that there's 2 typhoons that are in Washington, D.C., not tycoons, but typhoons, who are an economic wrecking ball? Not only are they a disaster when it comes to foreign affairs, but by God, you know, domestic policies, they absolutely suck. And of course, thanks, Holger. What about Buttigieg? Where is the transportation secretary, Pete Buttigieg? I mean, where is he through all this? Nothing is said about this guy. He's the transportation secretary. So this supply chain issue falls directly on the shoulders of the Department of Transportation. Of course, the president then is also responsible. But, you know, what the hell is going on with the transportation secretary? I mean,
well, Labor Secretary Marty Walsh is taking over those responsibilities, at least with this deal. And you're right, Buttigieg is nowhere to be seen. Interesting.
Yeah, he's only the transportation secretary.
Now, here's the kicker. The back pay and bonuses that were negotiated and ratified will give the union members an average payment of $11,000 per worker once the deal is ratified. But that's not the sticking point in the negotiations. It's the work rules and quality of life issues such as staffing levels and paid sick time, which the tentative agreements do not include. So far, railroad management has rejected proposals from union negotiators to add sick pay as a way to win ratification from the rank and file. So they're going to shut down transportation across the United States, rail transportation throughout the United States because of quality of life issues, staffing levels, and paid sick time. After each worker is going to be getting they've already agreed to pay each worker $11,000.
So there's 28,000 conductors in this union, and there's 24,000 engineers. So you're talking about 52,000 employees that could potentially bring the rail system to a halt.
Yeah. What do you think? Drones are going to cover the transportation? We'll just bring in the green energy drones to handle all this. Jeff Bezos, get on it.
And then have the electric cars deliver the goods from California to Florida and to New York, and it'll take them 72 days to get here because they have to charge up every 300 miles. You know, so this is interesting, okay? $11,000. So this actually could segue into this to our next story. So you've got a situation with the rail to pay these workers $11,000 bonus, right? Or $11,000 more. Now, how in good faith can the United States government negotiate with the rail workers after what the Federal Reserve, member of the Federal Reserve, stated with regards to the cliche of paying a living wage and paying, you know, the minimum wage of at least $15 an hour, and in some places now they're bucking for $18 an hour. So a member of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, now this is not a small, this is not a small time guy, by the way, a member of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors provoked backlash. What the hell just happened? Provoked backlash when he delivered a speech Wednesday. That was last Wednesday, okay? And that would be last Wednesday would have been roughly about what? The would have been the 16th of November, okay? So in which he urged employers to be wary of raising wages because doing so may exacerbate inflation. What? Yes, you heard it right. Wage growth has been a contributing factor to inflation, especially in the service sector. So it's important to get the labor market into a better balance to bring future wage growth down to a more sustainable level that will assist in moving overall inflation lower, said board member Christopher Waller. This would, of course, mean slower growth, but Waller's okay with that. Any other time, I would be pretty unhappy about slowing growth, but now, not now. If you believe, as I do, that supply bottlenecks in the economy have mostly abated, where, okay, and the elevated inflation is primarily a function of high demand, then slowing down economic growth is absolutely necessary to bring inflation down to our 2% target. So 6% of the inflation that we're seeing month over month is due to wage demand, wage growth. How in the world is the Biden-Harris regime going to negotiate with the rail system, okay, and be a proponent of raising wages $11,000 for 52,000 employees? How's that going to happen? You have the Federal Reserve Board of Governors is sitting there and telling them to stop, okay? Stop, don't give your employees a raise. Wait a minute, stop giving raises to your employees? Well, what about the Democrat Party cliches of a living wage? What about a $15 minimum wage? What about $18 minimum wage? I mean, I don't get it. I mean, are you saying that the Democrat Party has been lying, that their whole objective of paying a living wage is just a phony slogan, which doesn't mean anything? How can you not give someone a raise? Okay, so now we're going to pull back. Why don't we just scrap the minimum wage altogether? Let's just scrap it and let the market, okay, dictate what wages that can be paid and afforded. You want to start bringing prices down? And don't give me this crap about, oh, well, corporations are going to make money. Corporations are going to make money no matter what. They'll just charge more. And guess what? As the left wing in this country, the Marxists in this country have demanded $15 an hour wages, okay? And as they demanded that states raise their minimum wage levels to $10, $12, $15 an hour, what does that mean to business? That means that business must raise their prices in order to afford paying their labor force. Now, the left wing may not really understand that money just doesn't grow on trees, that small businesses just can't go in and grab a bucket of money and just dole it out. When you're running on 6 and 8% margins, you don't have the ability to jump wages from $8 an hour to $15 an hour. Almost 100% wage increase. And on top of that wage increase, you've got to pay taxes, Social Security, FICA. You've got workers' compensation. You have other forms of insurances and liabilities that you're going to have to pay based on those wages. And somehow the left wing, the Marxists in the United States, think that it's incumbent upon business to wipe out their entire profit system, wipe out their business savings in order to pay a living wage, which the left wing has determined it's $15 an hour. And now with inflation killing small businesses, killing businesses, killing job growth. You have the Federal Reserve coming back and saying, rethink about giving raises to your employees because wage inflation is the cause of inflation. Wage inflation isn't the cause of inflation going from 2% to 8%. Again, the gaslighting by the left wing is incredible. You just raised gas prices at the pump 200% in the last 21 months, which causes a transportation cost increase. You are now charging 220, 230, 300% more for diesel fuel. Do you think truckers are just going to simply reach into their pocket and just until they're broke, cover the losses in filling up their trucks, their tractors with diesel fuel? This is absolutely insane. This is what happens when you have an economic wrecking ball in Washington, D.C. You have this Marxist ideology that wants to blame everybody and their grandmother, except take responsibility for their economic failure. And Joe Biden is an economic failure. The Democrat Party are an economic failure. Their cliches of a living wage and of paying $15 an hour is killing small business. And now the Federal Reserve comes out, the Board of Governors, rethink about giving your employees raises. By God, we've got Christmas bonuses coming up. You know what? You may want to rethink those bonuses. At January 1st, you have employees who are due for raises. You may want to rethink those wage increases. This wage inflation is really, really. So for 4 years, you've been pushing this absolute phony and false cliche of a living wage. And now it's come back to bite you right in the butt. And you're going to penalize the very people that you profess to help. Now, if you would have stayed out of the way and stopped with your Marxism, stopped with your demands like a communist country does to make demands on private businesses, the labor markets would have taken care of themselves. There's no reason in America we should have any type of supply chain issue. There's no reason in America that we should have gone from $1.89 a gallon at the pump to $4, to $5, to $7 a gallon in some parts of the country. And if you don't think that's a direct effect on inflation, then maybe you should start taking some economic classes. Because while this administration, the Biden-Harris regime, are gaslighting the American people and blaming everybody and anybody, including Putin, the real culprits and the cause for the inflation that we're seeing today directly falls on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Barack Obama, and all the players that were in the Obama-Biden regime are an absolute failure. Their Marxist ideology is causing this. Taking America off of fossil fuels is the most reckless and irresponsible measure any politician could have ever taken. And then they lied to Joe Manchin of West Virginia, and Manchin finally says and calls out Biden. And of course, the media just absolutely falls on deaf ears, and it just goes to show where their allegiance is. So it's incumbent upon us to talk about this. It's incumbent upon us to talk about what the real causes of inflation are. And, as time goes on, little things start creeping out to show the hypocrisy of this administration, of the left wing. And this is another telltale sign when the Federal Reserve Board, a non-governmental office, comes up and tells. And I think, Al, you brought up a great point. Okay, the Federal Reserve now, a non-governmental entity, is coming out which controls the money supply in the United States, and they're instructing corporations not to give employees raises. This is a form of socialism. This is a form of communism. So when we call the Democrat Party Marxists, this is yet another description of how Marxists operate. They go in and they tell the private sector how you will conduct your business, how much money you will make, your profiteering, right? So when inflation goes up, when gas prices rise to $5 a gallon, let's not look at the root cause of that. Biden canceling all fossil fuels. Biden barking about shutting down coal fire plants in America. We have no other alternative means except for electric, okay, which is scarce right now because the American people can't afford to do it. And what happens? Gas prices go through the roof. People start paying dearly. Transportation costs have skyrocketed. No one's gotten a raise as a result of that, but transportation costs have skyrocketed. And what happens? The costs are then borne upon the consumer. They just bring it and send it to the consumer. Well, if I'm paying, instead of paying $100 to fill up my tractor, I'm now paying $500. I can't afford to take $400 loss each and every time I fill up, and that's twice a week. So what do? You raise your prices. So instead of that delivery being $300, it's now $600. And so turkeys will go from 69 cents a pound to 89 cents a pound to $1.89 a pound. And the same Federal Reserve Board of Governors now, I wonder if they're going to be in on the meetings, okay, with the unions, with the railroad unions, because I don't know how the railroads now can afford to pay an additional $11,000 to their 52,000 employees when, in fact, the Federal Reserve Board of Governors come out and said, you got to stop giving your employees raises. Now, will this cause a breakdown in the negotiation process? Will the railroad unions feel compassion for the American people and tell their employees to suck it up? And instead of getting back pay and bonuses, with the average payment being $11,000, the railroad workers will have compassion on the American people, given how bad the wage inflation has caused inflation over the last 21 months. Congressional action possible. Congress is already facing calls from a wide range of business groups to act to prevent the strike. About 30% of the nation's freight moves by rail when measured by weight of the freight and the distance it travels. So I wonder if Warren Buffett now, who owns some railways, if he will have compassion and release some of his billions in order to save the rail industry from going on strike. Save the American people, Warren Buffett. Back some of your money. Okay, give back some of your profits. And instead of paying it in the form of dividends to your stockholders, have some compassion for the American people so that the supply chain issue is not interrupted. I mean, I don't know where Pete Buttigieg is. Maybe he's getting ready to run for president in 2024, or maybe he's breastfeeding his newborns. But I don't know where the Secretary of Transportation is.
Nowhere. AWOL. Because Walsh has been involved in 20-hour-a-day bargaining sessions with the unions. Pete Buttigieg, nowhere to be found. If you do a Google search, you'll see that his name has not been mentioned with the strike negotiations in the past, I don't know, 3 to 4 weeks. Because he's incompetent. He's not a transportation guy. I don't know what the hell he is.
You know what? Maybe you just show some initiative. I mean, he's had 21 months to learn on the job, and certainly this is not the first time we have a supply chain issue that, that America is facing. Now, the first time, you know, you got caught with a deer, like a deer in headlights, okay? But don't you learn from that mistake? I mean, hell, you were the mayor of, what, South Bend, Indiana? You weren't a very successful mayor, obviously, but if you're too ignorant or too stupid to be able to run the Department of Transportation, maybe you should step down. Maybe you should go, maybe due to family, you should cite family reasons and resign, because you certainly aren't doing your job. But you know what, Al? No one's holding him accountable, not even the left-wing DNC state-run media. If this was a President Trump administration, if this was a George Bush administration, the transportation secretary was just negligent, they would have this guy skewered. They would have run him out of Washington, D.C. And yet there's nothing about Pete Buttigieg's failure as Secretary of Transportation. And now we're faced with another supply chain issue from a different source, okay? First, we have diesel fuel. That's a supply chain issue right now that's facing North Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, South Carolina, West Virginia, Delaware, and New Jersey, okay? And possibly Georgia, but it hasn't gotten down that far, okay? Now you've got a rail issue. So we have a trucking issue. That's a supply chain issue. And now we have a potential railway issue, and the Secretary of Transportation is AWOL. Right? I mean, what the hell's going on? Where is Pete Buttigieg? If you're on Twitter, please put out a tweet. Where is Pete Buttigieg? We need to find the Secretary of Transportation. If he's in Washington, D.C. negotiating, you know, with the railway, that's great. We need to know that. But there's absolutely – I'm looking at the CNN business right now. There is no indication of where Pete Buttigieg is. Nowhere.
Well, an October 17, 2021 story may shed some light on this, Vito.
Oh, go ahead.
Pete Buttigieg defends being on paternity leave, so perhaps – he may still be on paternity leave. It's been less than a year, so.
He's on paternity.
Just
once
throwing
again.
Out possible solutions.
Once again. I mean, there. When it comes to the American people, that to hell with the American people is the Democrat Party slogan. There is nothing democratic about the Democrat Party. I mean, in a time when the country is faced with some really, really turbulent economic times as a result of their own feckless and reckless policies, you have a member of the president's cabinet is AWOL. He goes on paternity leave. You know what? God bless you for adopting children, okay? But you have a husband, wife, or whatever the hell you have. Okay, you have a commitment to the American people because you accepted the job as transportation secretary. This isn't being a mayor where you can have your vice mayor run things. You have to show some leadership. And this guy is being touted as potential president of the United States, and he can't even get the transportation issues in order in the United States that we're facing supply chain issues. We faced supply chain issues within the last year. Now we're faced with supply chain issues on two fronts, rail and trucking. I don't know about you, but that's pretty damn serious. I think I would drop my nipples, okay, and get back to Washington, D.C. and try to work on behalf of the American people to solve these issues that was created by this feckless and reckless administration. Unbelievable. I just, you know, this is absolutely incredible what we're seeing today. The Marxism is a cancer, and this is exactly what we have in Washington, D.C. And you know what? Every member of Congress, if you're not beating down, I don't care what party you're with, because if you profess to work for we the people, okay, you serve in the United States Congress, the United States House of Representatives. You're a representative of the people. I don't care, okay, what party affiliation you're with. I don't care. It doesn't matter. You know what? The American people don't give an absolute crap of what party affiliation you are. If you profess to work for we the people, okay, you members of Congress should be beating down the door of, one, the Labor Department in the United States, Department of Labor, and the Secretary of Transportation. You're telling us that it's okay now to have a supply chain issue on two fronts, one being railway and the other being trucking? Where the hell is every House member from Georgia, okay, to New Jersey and Pennsylvania knocking on the door of the Secretary of Transportation and says, you need to resolve the diesel fuel shortages immediately. You need to be on hand, okay, to help assist this. Because the moron that's sitting in the White House is too stupid to really do his job, okay? So now we have cabinet members that need to step up to the plate, okay, and start acting responsibly for the American people. And it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat. It doesn't matter if you're a Republican. It doesn't matter if you're an independent. I don't care where the fuck your loyalty is, okay? If you're with Nancy Pelosi or if you're with Milquetoast McCarthy. The fact is that you work for we the people. We have a supply chain issue, and now we're faced with a rail supply chain issue. And it's the same silence, okay, from the 535 members in the United States Congress. Tomorrow morning, each and every person needs to get on the phone and call their representative and demand that they demand that the Secretary of Transportation get his ass in gear, okay, and get out there and start resolving these supply chain issues. I don't give a shit that he's out on paternity leave, or whatever the fuck leave it is. The fact is that the American people are hurting. And now we're faced just 2 weeks out, right after Thanksgiving and right before Christmas, with a possible supply chain issue. You know what? If you order your goods online, Amazon, and you expect them to be delivered prior to Christmas, and there's a railway strike, you could forget about it. You'll be able to get your little Johnny or little Mary their toys, and maybe in March, okay? Because there's absolutely zero urgency on the part of the Secretary of Transportation nor the President of the United States. There's no urgency by the 535 people in Congress. And you know, you're a lame duck Congress right now. You may not have run for re-election. You may have been defeated in the last election. That's all the more reason for you to get your ass out, okay, of your office and demand that these supply chain interruptions stop and get resolved immediately, because that's what leaders do when they work on behalf of the American people. And yes, you put America first. You put the American people first over your thievery, okay, and your religious holdings to the federal government. It's time to take this country back, and this is yet another indication of how poorly managed the American government is. The United States government under Nancy Pelosi, under Joe Biden, and under Chuck Schumer, under Mitch McConnell, under Kevin McCarthy is sad. It is one of the worst-run governments that we have ever seen in our lifetime. I hope that Amazon has it thrown away. Okay, that's a great point, boy. I really do. I hope that they have their own railway. But what about UPS that gets their goods and services, gets their goods transported by train?
Yep. But Vito, nothing's going to change. This is all by design. Like I said, President Biden took office January 20th, 2021. The average for a gallon of gas was $2.38. On January 20th, President Biden signs an executive order revoking approval for the Keystone and XL pipelines. In May, he proposed a budget that would increase taxes on oil and gas companies. On August 11th, this is all in 2021, Biden calls on OPEC to increase production to combat the increasing cost of oil. November, President Biden and the FTC Commission Chair Lena Khan investigate oil and gas companies' retail prices, so they start going after the producers. As gas prices spike in November, Before the holiday season, Biden orders the release of the Strategic Reserve. President Biden's Securities and Exchange Commission in March proposed rules requiring companies to disclose greenhouse gas emissions, diverting investment away from fossil fuel producers. That is why our energy prices are high, due to the policies of President Biden, and only President Biden. He doesn't want anything to change. He is winning. He wants higher gas prices. He wants higher diesel prices. He wants these supply chain disruptions.
Yes, he does. He wants the American people to feel the pain. And you know what? There's the globalist movement. Okay, America should be no better than the rest of the world, right? But yet they want our money. They want taxpayer money.
Yeah, he wants to usher in a green energy. He thinks that is the utopian solution for a perfect world, but it's utter and it's nonsense. It's never going to happen. They want a utopian world where the United States is no longer the top dog. It becomes, like you said, globalist, meaning that the largest countries will control production and distribution of goods and services on a world scale. It's scary. This is so different and wrong and antithetical to our constitutional republic. This is the fast road to serfdom. And nothing's going to change it until Biden's out of office.
Well, okay. So, Thule, I respect your comments. Thule said in the chat room, I respect the host for speaking this way, but in all honesty, I feel this country world has been lost to the elites. There's no hope. They are too deep in control now. And, you know, that's one thing that, you know, Al pretty much just said about who's in control. But you know what, Thule? We can't give up. And we are not going to give up. We still have some breath left. And yes, the global elitists have taken over much of the world. We have a chimpanzee in the White House who has ceded control of America to the World Economic Forum, to the world elitists, to the United Nations. And he is ensuring that Americans suffer. But, you know, Americans still have voices. And unlike BLM and Antifa, which destroys property and is violent, the American people who believe in America, who believe in the American way, okay, are not violent people until they're provoked, until they're attacked, until they're assailed. We have a voice still. And, you know, the one thing that scares the bejesus out of politicians is when the American people get annoyed and they become outraged. And while we're focused on Thanksgiving and upcoming holiday and people are wondering how many days are going to take off and what about Black Friday and, oh, they're going to go shopping and who's cooking the turkey. And it's a great time to distract the American people. And if you notice, much of the distractions come at opportune times. Okay, so you have a situation where Biden and the Biden crime family, more revelations come out, and suddenly Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States, appoints a special prosecutor to go after former President Trump, who's now a declared candidate for the President of the United States. And now you have Joe Biden and the Biden-Harris regime going after a political opponent, weaponizing the Department of Justice to go after a political opponent in order to distract from Joe Biden and the Biden crime family and their conduct and their thievery. And the American people aren't standing for this. And they're speaking out, so much so that a reporter actually asked the question of Jean-Pierre, okay, Psaki, with regards to Biden's handling of Hunter Biden and using his office for personal gains. And what did Jean-Pierre Psaki say? And at some point in time, okay, even newsreaders who want to be taken serious, okay, are going to start stepping outside the box, just like Joe Manchin did 2 weeks ago when he absolutely excoriated Joe Biden. And I'm sure he wrote that letter without the consent, the advising consent of the Democrat National Committee, which has sanitized old Joe Biden. And so now the American people still have a voice, Thule. And in my opinion, that voice now is to contact your representatives. Contact the Washington, D.C., United States House of Representatives office tomorrow. Use the U.S. House of Representatives phone line and let's overwhelm the switchboard. Let's overwhelm our representatives and demand that the Secretary of Transportation come front and center and be held accountable for the supply chain issues that we are facing and we are about to face. In October, thanks Holder, by the way, for this headline, Pete Buttigieg stated he rejected rail union deal. Pete Buttigieg stated the rejected rail union deal is just another natural process of back and forth. No sense of urgency, okay? Let's go ahead and play these games so that when it comes down to the 11th hour, okay, it's not going to be $11,000 per worker. It's going to be $21,000 a worker, and they're going to pat themselves on their back, and they're going to say, hey, we avoided a strike. No, this should be resolved today before Thanksgiving. It should be resolved by tomorrow, Tuesday, November 22nd. It should be resolved and put to sleep so that there is to ensure that there is no supply chain issue. At what point in time do we look at a sense of urgency when we have a diesel fuel shortage, which will cause a supply chain issue with trucking, and now we have a potential rail interruption, which also could cause a supply chain issue? What about the 110, 120 rail cars, okay? I looked this up the other day with regards to the closure of the Massachusetts coal fire plant, okay? And the other coal fire plants in the United States, one in the southeast, gets 110 to 115 gets 110 train loads of train cars of coal from West Virginia a day. Okay. Now, you interrupt the supply chain issue with the ability for the Stanton Energy plant down in Florida to receive 120 carloads of coal a day. What is that going to do to the people who are relying upon that Stanton Energy Center, okay, for their power? You say, well, just switch to solar? Oh, well, great. How many people have solar panels in their house? Where, in fact, will the Stanton coal fire plant get their energy? Oh, well, they have solar farms. Oh, really? So will those solar farms be enough energy, to produce enough energy for the people to rely on that? As the coal becomes scarce because the inability for trains to be able to transport the cars of coal down to Florida. You see, it isn't just the ability to bring furniture from North Carolina to Georgia or from North Carolina to Chicago, but now we're talking about energy sources. Using railroads to transport for energy sources, i.e. coal. The cleanest coal fire plant in the southeast is down in Orlando, Florida. It is cleaner than any of the facilities that India or China has operating. And you're going to hold the United States accountable for more of the of this green scam energy climate change bullshit that's out there, when in fact the real polluters are China and India and other third world shitholes, when in fact we are using great technology in order to burn clean coal And now you're going to interrupt that supply chain with a rail strike? Oh, and as Pete Buttcheek says, you know, this is a rejected rail union deal. It's just a natural process. Oh. Natural process from a natural princess. Oh, my gosh. But no sense of urgency. Don't worry about it, folks. You know? So your Christmas dinner is going to be a little bit delayed, and little Johnny and little Mary won't get their presents on time. But you know what? You can celebrate Kwanzaa when they get their presents.
Well, don't feel sorry for Joseph Manchin, Democrat, because he was double-crossed by President Biden. Manchin comes from a coal-heavy state where coal is probably one of the biggest businesses in his state of West Virginia. He's the governor, was the previous governor. Anyway, President Biden made a deal with him for him to go along with this one of the trillion-dollar spending bills. Manchin did not go along with it because it wasn't fiscally responsible. But he eventually changed his tune after him and President Biden made a deal that President Biden would not go after the coal plants of West Virginia, his constituency base. President Biden double-crossed Manchin, so now he is very upset. But don't feel sorry for Manchin because he is a Democrat that got double-crossed and will always be a Democrat.
You know, I don't feel sorry in the least for Joe Manchin because, you know, the political theatrics that they pulled, the Democrat Party pulled, to give the appearance that Joe Manchin was this centrist, this middle-of-the-road guy. Him and Kirsten Gillibrand are the centrist Democrats, you know, and they're holding back, you know, they're holding back on the on this spending bill. And in the end, what did Joe Manchin do? Senator Manchin went ahead and just caved. He did exactly what Democrats do, as did Kirsten Gillibrand. These great Democrat independents, you know, they are great minds and great thinkers. And in the end, Manchin was used. And you know what? I don't feel sorry for him in the least. But I got to give him credit where credit is due. Today, this was the article. It said Senator Manchin released the following statement on comments President Biden made about shutting down coal plants. Biden's comments are not only outrageous and divorced from reality, they ignore the severe economic pain the American people are feeling because of rising energy costs. Comments like these are the reason the American people are losing trust in Biden and instead believes he does not understand the need to have an all-in energy policy that would keep our nation totally energy independent and secure. Well, Joe, you're 21 months too late. You know, where were you back in January, on January 22nd, 2021, excoriating and scolding Joe Biden for taking America off of energy independence? Where were you? And then where were you? Okay, you could have absolutely held up that reckless spending bill, okay, and all this money that's going to the green scam movement to the tune of what, $750 billion of taxpayer money? And now he wants absolution because he writes this great response back, you know, calling Biden's comments outrageous and divorced from reality. We all know that. But then Manchin goes on to say, let me be clear. This is something the president has never said to me, but being cavalier about the loss of coal jobs for men and women in West Virginia and across the country who literally put their lives on the line to help build and power this country is offensive and disgusting. The president owes these incredible workers an immediate and public apology, and it's time he learned a lesson that his words matter and have consequences. Biden doesn't care. And you know what? You sold the people of West Virginia out, Joe Manchin. You sold them out. You sold your constituents out. You've had an opportunity, okay, to send a message, okay, not one to the Democrat Party, but two, okay, to Joe Obama, and you failed the American people. You failed.
Yep. It would have forced them to do the right thing for the wrong reasons, and that's to hold on to power. So hopefully the people of West Virginia, no more Joe Manchin. And what's also interesting is that all of this talk of coal was treated as a conspiracy theory when you and me and other conservatives were talking about this on social media and out in the world. It was a conspiracy theory about this attack on fossil fuels and that it'll never happen. Well, it ends up being true. Just like there's even a story where Democrat Warner elaborated on his admission last week that Trump correctly warned about the security dangers of TikTok, the addicting video-based social media program. He said, quote, "I think Donald Trump was right," Warner declared. I mean, TikTok is an enormous threat. The Virginia Democrat then explained why Trump was right, namely that TikTok collects massive amounts of data and that TikTok is beholden to the Chinese Communist Party. That was also conspiracy theory 2 years ago when that started coming out, when Trump made that statement, and that became true. And then the latest thing that became was conspiracy theory that is now true is CBS News finally making news by stating that Hunter Biden's laptop is actually factual and legitimate.
Ooh. Ah, okay. So two things on CBS News.
Not to derail this conversation, no pun intended.
That was very good. That was trained to say. I never saw that coming.
No caboose.
Wait a minute. Okay. So that, don't you feel a little suspect now that all of a sudden we have the DNC media outlets coming out and validating and confirming that the that the Hunter Biden laptop is authentic? I mean, do you find that kind of interesting that suddenly the DNC news outlets are confirming that this is a this is a legitimate issue? I'm sorry, I'm trying to think of a the laptop is legitimate, and it was, remember back in 2020, the New York Post was removed from Twitter and Facebook, and you went to Facebook jail if you mentioned anything about the Hunter laptop and the Hunter Biden hard drive. And now it's turning out that one DNC news affiliate after another now is stating that this laptop and this hard drive are authentic.
Now what they do with it, who knows? But it's finally true. How many people were, like you said, how many people were kicked off of social media temporarily or permanently? I would venture to say that President Biden won the election because that information was suppressed and treated as misinformation. And that's still going on. You want a real life story? I recently put up on YouTube a video of President Trump giving a speech, and because he had won an award for the Defender of Zion, it was a Defender of Israel award. But within his speech, it was about 40 minutes. He of course talks about the election and how the election was stolen. The video that I put up was unlisted, meaning it wasn't even out to the public, and yet YouTube captured the video, sent me a note saying that this video contains misinformation about the election, and all based on that, and that it was dangerous to be put out, even though it's all true.
Whoa.
And they flagged the video, flagged my account. I did have an opportunity to appeal, which I did. So
okay.
I told them, I said, well, that's not, I said, one, it's unlisted. They didn't care about that. And I said that there are Democrats that are also saying that the election of 2016 was illegitimate and unacceptable. And I put that into Google, illegitimate election 2016, and guess what pops up? Mm-hmm. All the Democrats who said that the Trump election was illegitimate, starting with Hillary Clinton and working your way down the suspects, the usual suspects. I gave YouTube that quote or that link, and I said, well, are you going to take down all of these other videos that are Democrats saying the same, really the same thing? They ignored that, and they didn't change their opinion.
Is that right?
Yeah, and it's just one story, just real life, just to give people an idea that the stories that we're talking about and what you're hearing in the media and this regarding these matters is true, and I will attest to that. I mean, think back of with the COVID virus. How many – take the military. How many military people lost their jobs or drummed out of the military because they refused mm-hmm. to take the COVID vaccine? And now they're starting to be brought back. There's a move now to bring back these military people who were fired and bring them back with back pay because they refused to take the COVID shot. So everything that was said negative about the COVID shot ended up being based in truth.
Correct. And how many pilots was the Air Force and Navy down as a result of pilots not wanting to get the jab and they were summarily removed from the military?
Yeah.
That'll tell you how many
ones that, and then the ones that did get the COVID shot, there's a high percentage of those pilots that are being recalled because they don't pass their physicals due to heart issues, myocarditis, and these are issues on a percentage above the norm. And we're starting to hear a little bit about that, too, in the public sector. But if you had mentioned this 2 years ago, you would have been flagged as a purveyor of misinformation and lies and determined that you were dangerous to society.
It turned out to be true.
So this is the thing with free speech. Our founding fathers were smart. Free speech is not for nice speech. It's free speech for bad speech and lies and whatever you want to call it, propaganda, to be out there equally, to where if somebody puts out bad speech, there'll be an equal number, if not more, people countering that bad speech and putting out even more and refuting it in the world of public opinion. Not some fact checker at Twitter or YouTube or Facebook determining what is truth and what is not truth. Because everybody's truth is an opinion.
Exactly. And it's not that it's bad speech. In this case, when you have speech that doesn't fit the opposing party or the opposing views narrative, they consider that opposing speech to be false. And to be untrue, when in fact it's just it's basically speech that directly opposes, you know, the narrative that they want to produce. And it turns out that speech was absolutely correct. It turns out the New York Post was absolutely correct, but it wasn't the narrative that particular political slant wanted, and they just wanted to make sure that it would have an impact on the election at that time.
Yeah, because there's clips of President Biden getting on live primetime TV and telling the American people that if you get the COVID vaccine shot, it'll cure you. You won't get it ever again. Like a normal vaccine would. Yeah. And it ended up not being true. They knew it wasn't true when he said it. And then when they got caught in the lie, they said, well, that was imperfect information that we had at the time. They had some canned excuse.
Yeah. Yeah. So Sue from New Mexico wants to know about the YouTube channel. Do you have the name of that YouTube video or how to obtain it?
Well, you can't anymore. It's I can't even pull it up from my YouTube account. They wiped it off.
Did they really?
They really did. So now I have to go to Rumble and put it up on Rumble, which I haven't done yet, but I will.
Okay. So when you do, let us know. So I'll let Sue know because she wants to know the channel as well.
Yeah, this is just one story among thousands. But it happened to me personally within the last 2 weeks. So for me, it's very interesting and timely. But I'm sure everybody has a story or two that they've heard about this, if it did not happen to them personally.
So you got censored. So here it is. You got censored for a factual video. For a factual video of President Trump accepting an award, and you were censored by the fascists of YouTube because they didn't agree with it. So let me ask you this: what's your take on President Trump? How was the ceremony? How was President Trump? Was he in good spirits? Did he appear to be old? I mean, how? What was your overall view of President Trump and his awareness and all that?
Oh, it was wonderful. The man's what, 75 years old. He accepted the award. Then he spoke for 45 minutes. The guy wouldn't shut up. He spoke for 45 minutes extemporaneously, moving from subject to subject, and then, as Jen Psaki would say, he circled back to the point that he started making and then went again. He fought. It was riveting, and he's a great public speaker, and he did this all without just right off the top of his head, which was phenomenal. So, yes, it was this man is on fire, and he is ready to run. And now that he's put his hat in the ring, he's got my vote, I can tell you that.
I'll circle back to that in a second. I'm sorry. Sue wanted to know what your YouTube channel is. What's the name of your YouTube channel?
I'll send it to her.
Okay. All right. Good.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, that was one of the topics I had. And before I mention any further on President Trump, I did find the House switchboard number, and I'll put it in the chat room. But I encourage everyone to I'm asking that starting tomorrow, okay, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, next Monday, next Tuesday, is to contact the U.S. House switchboard, ask for to speak to your representative wherever you're located in the United States in your congressional district, and you can call area code 202-224-3121. And ask for your representative, be nice, no swearing, and tell them that you want the Secretary of Transportation to be held accountable. You want the railroad strike to be resolved immediately so that there is no supply chain issue. And we want the diesel fuel shortage resolved immediately, especially, okay, two things. Winter in the Northeast is going to be horrendous. It's going to be cold. And secondly, we have truckers who are delivering and transporting goods around the United States, and that supply chain issue is threatened to be interrupted, and it has been interrupted because of truckers in North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia cannot buy diesel fuel. I want to know what our representatives are doing. Area code 202-224-3121. Ask for your representative in your congressional district, and you want to know what's being done. I'll put the number in the chat room as well. Okay, so Donald Trump announces candidacy for president of the United States. Your thoughts about that announcement? We're not surprised. Or were you surprised? And of course, now we're going to find out there's no objective journalism anymore. The media has sanitized the feckless fraud in the White House and his disastrous economic policies and selling out the American people for the green scam economic policies. And I'll tell you, Al, I'm worried about President Trump's safety. You know, the left wing has incited their people to irrationality. They've incited their people to violence. The Jerry Nadler manifesto has been in place since 2016. And that manifesto is quite clear. The manifesto cites never giving Trump the benefit of the doubt. The goal of the Democrat Party, the left wing, the never Trumpers, they have two goals they must keep their eyes on. And one is depressing Trump's public support and dividing the congressional GOP from him and from each other. And despite the number of wins that President Trump had from endorsed candidates this past midterm election, the media has definitely spun that Trump has lost his flavor. And, of course, they tried to dictate the narrative that that the Republican Party does not want President Trump. But in the meantime, he continues to move forward. With that in mind, with the Democrat Party initiative of trying to take Trump down, I worry about the man's safety. You know, what do you think, Al?
I think it's a legitimate concern. You got the FBI and the DOJ having investigations upon investigations. In fact, the DOJ and Garland, which you talked about earlier, having a whole nother investigation on top of the six or seven other investigations that started the minute that he came down from Trump Tower before he was even president. It almost seems like double jeopardy. So you've got the federal law enforcement agencies' loyalty to the rule of law is questionable at best. You do have the Democrats' operatives, as you said, highly charged and motivated for trouble and violence with Antifa and their other like groups. But with all that said and done, President Trump is well aware of these threats, and he's still running. So God bless him for that. But you know what I learned? I learned that actually some of our greatest enemies are in the House, are within our walls. And in the Republican Party, the top three or four would be Rona McDaniel, McCarthy, McConnell, and Mitt Romney are the top four. Now, these are the traitors in the House within the Republican Party who are going to do everything in their power to derail President Trump's run for office. And they don't care if we don't have a Republican in the presidency. They will work for a Biden victory to make sure that Trump is not elected. They're to me, are the most dangerous people on planet Earth right now in regards to President Trump's campaign for president in 24.
I can't disagree with you on that on any level. I mean, you're absolutely correct on that. And you know, if you could be honest, I mean, if an individual can be honest, it's really based on emotion that you dislike Trump. And the emotion part was set by the Democrat Party, like you said, when he came down the escalator. Yeah, he's arrogant. Yes, he's brash. But, you know, he gets things done. And speaking to some left-wingers, Democrats, never Trumpers, it's the same thing. They're tired of his ego. It's his ego. Well, what about his policies? You should care about the policies, because what we saw, okay, initiated on January 20th, 2021, was the dissolving of all of his policies, which became a disaster for the United States of America. It was an absolute economic disaster. And we could have avoided all that very easily. And, you know, even if the cabal came in and took out Trump as far as, you know, rigged the 2020 election, and maybe we should just stop talking about the rigging of the election, but let's just say even with the rigging of the election, you installed somebody. If you would have just kept the same policies in place, okay, and started running, you wouldn't have run up a $6 trillion deficit in 21 months. I don't know what part of that doesn't scare the living crap out of each and every American. $6 trillion deficit increase in 21 months. And now you've got the Democrat Party operatives out there saying, well, you know, the Republicans, what's their plan for the economy? Excuse me. Okay. The Republicans have been excluded from all economic talk right now, this last 24 months. Okay. So let's be honest with that. This has been total control by the Democrat Party. Nancy Pelosi had an agenda, and that was to promote, even that no matter how bad of an economic policy it was to promote Joe Biden's radical agenda, his extreme agenda for the United States of America, because it diametrically opposed President Trump's economic policies over the last 4 years. Now, all based on emotion, because we know how cynical, how irreverent, how irresponsible and reckless Nancy Pelosi truly is. And yet these unconstitutional practices are, you know, by the left wing, by the cabal in Washington, D.C., by the establishment, by the Uniparty, is an accepted practice now. It's okay. It's all right now. Hey, you know, you want to forgive $10,000 of college tuition? Just have a unilateral authoritarian in the White House decree upon the American people that we're going to forgive $10,000 of student loan debt. Excuse me, but Article 1, Section 1 of the U.S. Constitution is clear. The U.S. House is the one to have all fiscal spending issues, not the President of the United States. And you know, three years ago, Nancy Pelosi would have had a brain hemorrhage if President Trump would have done this unilaterally. And somehow it becomes an accepted practice. So, you know, I agree. Boy, I agree. You know, 81 million people don't care. That's exactly right. You know, the thing is, when it comes to Donald Trump, out an emotion is activated, but irrationality comes into play, because you cannot argue with President Trump's policies working. The border was secured. The border of the United States was secured. And now the border is the most porous it's ever been, but that's also intentional, because you've got Chuck Schumer showing that hand of the Democrat Party, of the left wing, of the anti-Americans just last week by proposing amnesty. Now it's time to give amnesty. Oh, okay. You're finally talking about the border, schmuck.
Amnesty to all the illegal aliens, the millions. Chuck Schumer is trying to form a illegal alien legal Democrat base to keep the Democrats in power for the next two decades. Mm-hmm. Talk about criminal.
Yeah,
holy mackerel.
That sly son of a gun, that silver-tongued devil from New York, when he stated, we're going to give amnesty to 11 million, you know, migrants that came to the United States and more if necessary. And I was like, wait a minute. So just throw a number out there, because 11 million has been the number all along with the destructive Democrat Party. But now they know that at least 2 to 4 million more illegal immigrants, illegal aliens entered the United States. So now that number will be closer to 15 to 20 million. And you're going to give them carte blanche access to the United States. Well, because you've already attached them to Medicaid programs in states, because it's the Biden-Harris regime who transported illegal aliens in the middle of the night to cities and towns across America, who now are living off of Medicaid programs in states across America, and they're busting budgets. And how you know that's happening is because in New York City, you already have Mayor Adams. He's bitching and moaning about how the cost of the illegal aliens that are coming into his city, and we can't afford them because we've already budgeted these items. No shit, Sherlock. And when a left wing, you know, mayor comes out and says something like that, that should be news. But again, the DNC state-run media suppresses that information. okay? And it's incumbent upon us, the conservatives, to start speaking out and saying, this is exactly what we're talking about. You called us radicals. You called us you called us liars. And now you've got Mayor Adams confirming exactly what we were talking about. Illegal aliens coming into your respective communities, and now they're taking from the Medicaid systems, okay, of that state, and you're busting those states' budgets where they can't afford those services because they've already allocated the money based upon their fiscal years. And so what happens? The federal government now has to use taxpayer money and dole it out to these states that they have shipped illegal aliens. Okay, they've trafficked illegal aliens to certain parts of the United States, because that's what Biden and Harris have done. They've trafficked illegal aliens around the country.
Yeah, well, most of them in the sanctuary city states. But you know what's even more egregious is a slap in the face is to the tens of thousands of angel families that have lost, had loved ones within their family murdered by illegal aliens. They're called angel families, angel moms and angel dads. And that doesn't even count the hundreds of thousands, if not more, of citizens of the United States that are the victims of illegal alien crime, from misdemeanors to felonies, child human trafficking by the cartels, all the drugs coming over that are destroying our country. That is all at the hands of President Biden, all at the hands of those who want an open border. And the place to go is go to defendtheborder.org and help them to educate the United States how important a strong border is. And you'll be working with Tom Homan. Tom Homan was President Trump's border czar, the head of ICE. And he's working with defendtheborder.org. Go there and help him out if you can, because this open border is a kiss of death. It's like a Trojan horse, the Trojan horse story in Greek mythology. How did they win the war? The Romans all went into a Trojan horse. They went inside the gates, and then they murdered everybody inside and took the castle. It's the same damn principle.
And the Trojan horse is open now. It's open all across America now.
Yep.
You know, people don't realize, Holger and I had this brief discussion about the Medicaid programs and how the Medicaid programs now are being used to support the illegal aliens, and they're going into, put it this way, they're intentionally shipped around the country. Okay, and states have to give some sort of stipend, whether it's medical care. You've got rent now. They're getting EBT cards. They're getting rent rolls or rent checks. I mean, this is something that
illegal aliens that are here illegally are getting all of these benefits, including Medicare and Medicaid.
They're not getting Medicare. They're getting Medicaid. Yeah. Well, I guess if they're over 65, they'll probably make an exception, but they are getting Medicaid, and that's swelling the Medicaid doles in the states around the country. And Mayor Adams confirmed it in New York City. And so did the mayor of Washington, D.C. So if these two large cities are confirming the cost of Medicaid as a result of illegal aliens being infused into their communities, imagine what it's doing to Boston, Massachusetts, to cities in Iowa, to cities in Minnesota and Michigan, all across the United States, Chicago, and in cities that you wouldn't even think of, Raleigh, North Carolina, all these locations around the country. And somehow this has to be accessible. And in the meantime, you have a government in Washington, D.C., who's pissing away the federal funds, $48 billion to Ukraine. And now we're finding out how sorted Zelensky is. And then you've got $11 billion now for climate refugee nonsense that's being out there, and reparations for climate. climate change reparations. I mean, can you think of anything more ridiculous?
They're taking advantage of the asylum loophole coming over the border. They call themselves asylum seekers, and then they get a court date at the soonest, supposedly at the soonest, but they're backlogged a couple of years at best. So then they let them go free in the United States for a court date a couple of years down the road or a year, and then they disappear. And they're not refugees. These are illegal aliens.
Yes.
And President Trump had the back to Mexico policy. Yes, you come in, you file your paperwork for asylum, then you go back to Mexico, and then we'll run it through, and then we'll call you when your case gets before a judge.
Yep. Jeez. And see, President Trump was bad. And this is all emotion. All he did was put America first, and he looked out for the American taxpayer, the American people, and you know, he relied upon the House and the Senate to spend money wisely because that's their fiduciary responsibility, and somehow this guy's a bad man. Go ahead.
And the other thing that's got the Democrats going crazy is that on Twitter, Elon Musk reinstated President Trump's account. He unblocked it, and the Democrats are going and the Marxists are going nuts. But we've been vindicated again, Vito, and it involves Iran and the protests. Remember how we've been saying for the last 2 or 3 months that the protests are going to end and these protesters are going to go away because the heavy hand of the Iranian mullahs are going to attack and murder and kill their own people until they crush the protest? Well, the Iranian mullahs, it's reported, have sent in tanks and troops and firing on the anti-hijab women and the other protesters.
Yep.
So that protest will probably be over within the next 60 to 90 days.
And
body count in the process.
And the Biden-Harris regime has not pulled out of the Iran deal and cited human rights issues. I mean, this is a really bad scenario that's unfolded in Iran. And you mean to tell me that this administration, this regime, is that irresponsible to accept and reward? I still want to reward Iran for what they're doing to their people?
Affirmative.
Wow. Well, tomorrow, the cross and the crescent, and we got 3 minutes left. We didn't even talk about the cryptocurrency scandal that's befallen the Democrat Party, and that's, I guess, for next week. But tomorrow, we got the cross and the crescent at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. You got Hank Jones and Poly Sports at 5:30 p.m. on Wednesday. Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Paul is also the author of The Cancer of Civilization Jihad. It's a great book. It's his second book, which you can pick up on Amazon.com. Friday, Andrew Harrod is hosting Conservative Casual Friday, and that's 12 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can catch Andrew's writings on PajamaMedia.com and also JihadWatch.com. Saturday, Minister Simon Dakduk and the beautiful Christy revealing the truth about Islam, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and maybe Osama can go into a little bit more about what's happening in Qatar and the hypocrisy of Islam. Sunday, we got the Interfaith Dialogue, and I think Paul Sutliff is hosting that show, and that's at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Monday, Alan, I'll be back at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Other shows are along the Blog Talk Radio family. You've got G-Ski and Dave, but their Airways America is on hold right now, but please keep G-Ski in your prayers. Annie, Southern Sense Talk Radio. Check out Annie and Curtis Bennett on Friday, 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Simone Nicole Show. If you want a break from politics, sports, and Islam, check out the Simone Nicole Show. It's a great self-help show. 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Spreaker.com, Spreaker.com. Joshua does a fantastic job. Bigfoot kills it with regards to the music that's played. He knows this guy's amazing. Big, you're amazing, man, when it comes to music and groups. Audrey Russo of Real Talk Radio, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Thursdays. Go to audreyrusso.com. Great guest. Does a great job. Her co-host, Mr. P, gives some great monologues. Check out Bigfoot, Blogspot, www.bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. Bring it on, boy. Ducky Northwest, Thule, Gulf Dogs, Suit from New Mexico. I missed somebody else, but that's okay. And I want to thank everybody on the podcast. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there. Please have a safe and happy Thanksgiving to you and your families. God bless you guys. Al, any comments?
Adios, amigos. We'll see you next week. Happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, as Al said, happy Thanksgiving. Thank you all for joining us. You guys be safe out there. Ciao, everybody. Yeah.
Right. Boy, on that went fast.
It sure did. Sorry for bloviating so long.
No, your rants are spot on, perfect.
You know, this supply chain issue, you know, we talk about it, but you know, this is critical, because now we're not talking about just one component of the supply chain any longer. Now we've got two major components of supply chain issues. We've got the transportation side, the trucking side, and then we have the train, the rail side. I mean, this is incredible, and you've already got interruptions with the shipping, because you're having issues offloading these ships with supplies. So you've got all three components now are being stressed out, and potentially eating away at the ability for Americans to get goods.
Yeah, the ripple effect is huge. You can't even put a finger on it. You can speculate, but it affects everything. Everything.
Everything. And when I was reading about Manchin and the coal industry, and I was reading about the Massachusetts coal fire plant that was shut down, that closed, the Massachusetts electric rates shot up 57%. And then they were talking about the coal fire plant down in Orlando, and it's called the Stanton Energy Plant. And that has somewhere like 110 to 120 carloads of coal coming in a day. Now, if you have interruption in coal, rail service, what's going to happen with regards to the coal that's being transported to the coal fire plant down in Orlando? The interruption that's going to cause, and then you have an interruption in what? You have an interruption in electricity being delivered to the consumers that it serves, and we're not supposed to be concerned about this. It's flat out irresponsible.
Lots irresponsible. That's the struggle. That's the struggle we're in.
Yeah, and bigly. You know, President Trump had it right, and you know, this whole thing with Trump, it's simply based on emotion. These people are just absolutely irrational individuals. Everything that the outrage against the man is strictly irrational. My goodness gracious.
I was having the same conversation with a very reasonable liberal, and he was talking the same thing. Oh, well, his tweets are so mean. I don't like the way he acts, and I just wish he'd be a little nicer, and he could probably get more done. So I said to him, I said, you do realize, this is how I look at it. I said, with the Abraham Accords, when President Trump brokered a deal, negotiated a deal for four Muslim Arab countries to shake hands with Israel and form a peace settlement, I said, that doesn't just happen. There are so many skill sets involved being able to make that happen that no other president could. I said, you think that maybe whatever these negative comments about Trump may just not be true? Because if somebody is so reckless as you think he is, so mean-spirited, There's no way that a deal like that could be put together because it takes a leader to do it. And he looked at me and didn't say a word.
Oh, how could he? That was absolutely excellent. What a great response, Al. I mean, you're absolutely 100% right.
I mean, you've worked deals. It takes a lot of skill set to put and negotiate a big project and make it happen. Not only do you have to please the client, but you've got to make your side work in coordination with you to make it happen. And then you've got outside influences that also have to be dealt with, and you just make that on a big scale. How difficult that is. It's difficult to do in real life when you're putting a big project together involving lots of people.
And the ability to negotiate with the Arab world, with any Arab world, to include Israel, and to get a deal done, that in itself, you're not an unstable individual if you can bring, how many was there? Six, five, eight? Eight Islamic countries together to shake hands with Israel, and you're telling us how irrational he is?
Yeah.
Wow.
But Republicans say that too. They go, oh, well, when they're talking to other people who may not be supporters of Trump, they say, oh, yeah, well, yeah, he might have these negative characteristics. He might be arrogant or mean tweets or whatever, and a little brash, and they'll try to make excuses and agree with them that he does have those traits, and I say that he doesn't have those traits. They're extremely confident, and he makes things happen. And you're being offended because you just want to be offended, and you want to find something wrong. And then on top of that, then I ask him, I said, is there anything that Trump could do to change your opinion of him? And then 9 times out of 10, they'll just shut the hell up and say nothing. It's like talking to Democrats.
Well, I'd like to know from individuals who despise Trump and hate him, and literally despise the man, hate the man for you know, based on emotion. But in all honesty, has that man gotten a fair shake since he first announced for president of the United States back in 2016. I mean, this man was so much of a threat to the institution in Washington, D.C. And forget about cabal and all the institution. He was such a threat that you had a sitting administration, the Obama-Biden administration, use and weaponize the FBI to go after the man, to surveil the man. And it's like, why? What was so threatening about Donald Trump? Yes, you know what? He did have a tongue during the debate, but you know, these people kept attacking him. And he's not a Jeb Bush where he sits back and he takes it, or a Dana Bash Second Amendment lady. Forgot her name. I think it might be – no, it's not Dana Bash. Anyways, he's not that person to sit there and say, okay, you know, I'll just take it. But in the meantime, this man has been maligned every day since 2016. And you think maybe, he's just not going to take that nonsense and he's going to fight back. And obviously, the powers to be are not accustomed to somebody – not just rolling over and playing dead and capitulating and just cowering to the falsities that are put forth in order to malign the individual. You know, I don't blame the guy for fighting back. And how many times have we said we want somebody who's going to fight for the American people? And this is what the guy has done since taking office in 2017. He's just basically fought for the American people.
Sue put out a tweet, something, because you always talk about the WEF and Klaus Schwab,
mm-hmm.
and She put out a tweet and said, Klaus Schwab, he was born in Hitler's Germany in 1938. His father, Eugene Schwab, a close confidant of Hitler, was then head of Escher-Wyss, a strategic company of Nazi Germany, and had his own camp where prisoners had to work. Klaus is the current president of the World Economic Forum. How's that pedigree? I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. Wow.
Wow.
And Sue wouldn't have retweeted it if it wasn't true.
Spot on. So, and so okay, so can I bring up something really quick with regards to the World Economic Forum?
Yeah.
In 2017, President Trump attended the Davos, Switzerland World Economic Forum meeting. And I don't know if you remember it, but he sat around the table and he had something like 12 to 15 corporate leaders from large corporations around the world. And one after the other, they praised President Trump for leading the charge in lowering the corporate tax rate from 35% down to 21%. And they were, and that was the only deed that Paul Ryan did in the House as Speaker. Then within months, the World Economic Forum was starting to bash Trump at all levels, led by George Soros. And I thought, you know, I thought I was reading something wrong. You know, wait a minute. You know, just 2 months prior to that, all this bashing, President Trump had a successful Davos, Switzerland World Economic Forum meeting with all these heads of corporations, and they all committed, each and every one of them committed to investing in the United States and the creating jobs, whether that investment was, you know, $10 billion or one was $150 billion over 10 years. Just from lowering the corporate tax rate and taking the trillions off of their savings and start investing in the United States. And without missing a beat, guys like Soros and Schwab started attacking Trump. And I, you know, at the time it bothered me. It's like, did I miss something in that World Economic Forum? But now, you know, as time goes on, you see what the objective is of the WEF, what the objective is of Klaus von Schwab, Klaus Schwab. And it's amazing how much this particular organization wants to control the economics in the world, including the United States. And I think it was incumbent upon them to ensure that Donald Trump was defeated in the 2020 election, because he had such a successful economic forum meeting in 2017.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a huge story there. I think you've tapped into it.
Yeah, I got to go back because I saved some. I made some notes from that because I can remember I was really and truly. You know, that's when I became a believer in Donald Trump. When I watching that economic forum, watching that roundtable, and watching how poised Trump was and how much of a leader, and we were being told by, you know, Nancy Pelosi and the lunatic Waters, you know, about how unstable and mentally ill Trump was. And then I sat there and I watched Trump, specifically watched him. He knew each and every person around the table, and there was one in particular he didn't know what the industry was, but he asked. He says, what do you do and what can you provide? And he looked at one guy, one corporate leader, said, I know your business. You do a great job. You have this, and blah, blah, blah. And then the guy said, Mr. President, you know, we're committed over the next 5 years to invest $100 billion in the United States. We're going to move a manufacturing plant from this country to the United States. And we're going to – and, you know, isn't that all what we wanted? You know, why is it that we became reliant and dependent upon communist China for manufacturing when, in fact, the United States has the capabilities to do it themselves? And what did Trump portray? He portrayed that ability, that excellence in the United States, that passion. And I just that was a turning point for me with regards to Trump.
Mm-hmm. That's a great story. You should share that next Monday for sure.
Well, I'll do some more. I'll try to remember to pull some of the notes. I know I still have them somewhere around, and I'll pull it from that because I took some notes while he was conducting that that roundtable, and it was just very impressive. That absolutely changed my opinion of Trump. That's when I became a believer in his policies and his abilities. And like you said, his negotiating skills, he knows how to negotiate. And for some reason, for some odd reason, and this is where then it becomes conspiratorial in some ways, but his method, he's been rejected. Other than a certain powers to be wanting America to be dependent upon the world and to be no better and to lead from behind. And I think that was the Obama method, was to lead from behind. And that's become an accepted mm-hmm. practice with the Marxists. I think obviously Donald Trump was a threat.
Yeah, to their power and the Republicans' power. The establishment.
The establishment.
Yeah, because how many people say, oh, I'm tired of politicians. I want a person who's a businessman to run things in the government for a while. Well, you got that. And then they turn against them. But one thing I tell you, it is showing who the rhino traitors are within mm-hmm. our own party. And they all got
Without
their
a doubt.
Jobs back. And they all got their jobs back in mm-hmm. leadership positions. No, we didn't even go in with Carrie Lake and what's happening in Arizona. She's contesting her election.
Yeah.
Hopefully by next week that'll be resolved and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. Sue sent me a tweet on that too about with Carrie, or a text on that, and I'll have to reread that one. And also what's happening in Harris County, Texas. That was a long video, but man – you know, when Abbott turned around and called out the Texas Rangers and what other body to investigate what was happening in Harris County, Texas, man, this is going to hit the fan.
I hope so, because they're not counting on the Republicans fighting back.
Right.
They think, oh, well, we'll call them some names in the media and then they'll scurry off and just lick their wounds and go, oh, that's just the way it is. But not Carrie Lake and not Abbott. So that's what it takes. You got to fight back. God bless them.
And it's happening around the country, too. It's not just, you know, mm-hmm. we're focused in Arizona. We see what's happening in other parts of the country, you know, Pennsylvania. But all of a sudden, there's more stuff that's being uncovered in almost everywhere around the United States. I mean, mm-hmm. there's issues in Florida, there's in Georgia, you have something going on in North Carolina, they're going after people in New York. I mean, it's like, holy shit, this has become like an epidemic or a pandemic of fraud around the country.
Yeah, because I was a poll watcher this year, so I had the last shift and the last day on November 8th, and part of my job was – you take the number from the machine, total number of ballots that ran through the machine, and then they have mm-hmm. a tally of the number of people that came in and took a ballot, and those two numbers have to add up. And it was a whole thing. It took like 30 minutes to get all the receipts from the machine and then to tally up all the ballots that were handed out and then to match it, and it ended up being 100% accurate, but it was some work. So there'd be a lot of places for people who wanted to lie and cheat to be able to do it.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you know if those numbers then, after it was reported to the supervisor of elections, did those numbers still match? If you were to go pull up the county or the precinct and how it voted, did those numbers match the tickets still later on?
Good question. I don't know. I went, I stayed until the woman who was taking the ballots, or having the voter – put the ballot into the machine one at a time in a line.
Okay.
After 7 o'clock, then all the voting stopped except for the people that were there. So if the last person was done, then she started closing down the machine. She did all the tabulations and the receipts. And then about 20 minutes later, she started putting like plastic locks on the machine.
Okay.
And then once those were on, then I left. So after that, I don't know what happened. But yeah.
So you watched? Did you watch her print out the tabulations?
I looked at them.
You actually looked at them. Ah, okay.
Yeah.
And did you get any pushback?
None. No. The people there were very nice, and I said I had to ask. They didn't volunteer for me to do that. I had to ask. I had to be assertive, but I had a checkoff sheet of what I needed to do, so
okay.
There would be no mistakes on my end.
Sue's
kind
got
of
a question.
Cool process.
That really is. I'm going to put Sue on here. Hi, Sue. Good evening.
Hey, Sue. Hi, good evening. Hi, Al.
Hey.
Yeah, I do a lot. I watch YouTube a lot. That's why I'm so interested in your channel. But anyway, get it to me sometime.
I'll get your email from Vito, and I'll send it to you.
My email doesn't work. I have a really old Android phone. If you can DM me on Twitter, that'd be great. That will work great. Yeah, my email doesn't work, among other things. But have you heard about the shortages of really basic antibiotics such as erythromycin and things like that?
No.
Oh, yeah. I'll get some information to you guys. Right now, there's a shortage of the one drug I can remember is erythromycin, which that's one of the drugs that's used to treat, you know, children's, like, the whooping cough and, you know, respiratory illnesses and stuff they have. And it's even worse now because of the 2 years of children having to wear masks, so many of them, their natural immunity is way down. And part of it, I don't think it's in all states, but the reason I brought it up is because this is part of the supply chain also. Well, number one, we're getting our pharmaceuticals, a lot of them from China, which I could see China withholding some of this. And why aren't the pharmaceutical companies, you know, ramping up the production of these? But part of it also, because it seems to be different in different states, but it's how the drug companies can get the erythromycin and these, I mean, these are old drugs, antibiotic drugs, how they can get them to the states. And I think a lot of it also has to do with the supply chain that you were talking about.
Wow. I'm looking at I just found the list. Lisinopril for high blood pressure.
That's my truck. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
You take lisinopril?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you ever have a scratchy throat that you can't get, you can't get rid of it, that might be because of the lisinopril. Because I took it for my blood pressure, and it gave me a really bad cough.
Mm-hmm.
And then I switched to Valsartan, and it went away, for whatever that's worth.
Well, I don't know. I don't. Lisinopril does nothing to me. I've taken it
and
for years.
Good. Yeah,
I'm good with it. So, you know, everybody has different side effects, but yeah, lisinopril really, really helps me. But yeah, there's a whole list of, and these aren't new drugs or anything else. You know, I'll try to do some research and see, you know, how we know how much of these drugs have been switched to getting them from China. And China would love nothing better. And then also you got to look at them wanting these, you know, epidemic crises and stuff going on and they're still wanting masks being worn and all this BS that they're doing. You know, it's just suspicious, all of it. But how can something like that be short supply?
Exactly. Which contributes to the wearing a mask have contributed to a lot of these conditions. And now we've got we have a supply chain issue. Amoxicillin oral presentation is also potassium chloride injections, morphine injections. Holy crap.
Oh, my God. Potassium chloride, that's a really bad one to be. I mean, how long has potassium been around? There's no reason for a shortage.
Yeah, exactly. Thiamine, that's another one. There's a thiamine injection shortage. That can be really severe for patients. That's a huge issue.
Well, not only that, but no, it's iodine that you take if there's a nuclear, you know, radiation coming towards you. So, no, that's not thiamine. But, yeah, thiamine, that's a... another bad one too. But I mean, these are all medications that have been out for a long, long time. And I'm just wondering, you know, how many of these are now coming from China, and they never, ever should have come from China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't it kind of ironic how President Trump was trying to thwart this back in 2018 and 19, and then he's been suddenly, you know, summarily rejected for having the audacity to remove, you know, the dependency from communist China. Okay, go ahead. So I'm sorry.
I got to let you know something else that I just found out too, which blew my mind. I don't know what's going on with Biden and the supply chain. I swear to God. One of my medical supplies that I get every month and a half, and it's been getting harder and harder to get it. And so I had to call Amazon this month about it. And when I was talking to the rep, they said, well, we don't know when it can come because of when it comes out of China. You know, it's coming from China. And I said, wait a minute, this is a product that's made in the USA. And it states it on the website and everything. She says, oh, yeah, it's made in the USA, but then they ship it to China, and then we have to get it from China.
Oh.
Kid you not. Truth. So what the hell is going on? This comes from a medical company in the United States, and I checked them out, you know, and I've gotten from them for almost a year now. And, you know, when it got harder and harder to get it and everything, and I was like, what's going on? And I got an Amazon rep who told me, why are they taking a product made in the USA, shipping it, you know, sending it to China, and then Amazon has to get it from China?
Is there a packaging issue? Is it because of but you can't, are you telling us that there's, I mean, not you, but they're telling us that packaging is cheaper to send it to China and then interrupt the supply chain on top of that? Oh, my God.
When I get it, it comes in the same, it's like a plastic bag. And that hasn't changed from when I started getting this. Maybe it's been 2 years I've been buying this product. And then when I finally do get it, the plastic bag is put inside of an Amazon box, just like I've always received it.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I mean, there's nothing that's changed in the packaging or anything. It's just getting harder and longer for me to be able to get this product. And so I'm trying to stock up, you know, I'm just waiting for them to say, you know, hey, 2 months or 3 months before you can get it, which is happening on a lot of things that I get. You know, it's getting harder or they're out of it. Like, I use, well, not, it's Robitussin. I use the generic Robitussin at night sometimes, you know, the nighttime. And there's a shortage of that.
Really? Robitussin?
And, yeah. And what you can get, because there's a shortage, the price in some cases is double or triple the what I used to pay for it a month ago.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I have to get my stuff off of Amazon because I can't go out and shop and, you know, what I need. And so I'm forced to use Amazon. And, you know, I'm just finding so, so much. And I just wonder, you know, what is Biden doing and what is he doing with China? And I think he's still getting money from China. You know, this whole Biden, you know, they're going to look into him and his son. But he was just over in China. What the hell is Biden doing? Is China paying Biden to pull all this crap with our supplies and everything? China right now is running our country.
Could be.
I don't think it's out of the realm, especially with China giving $70 million plus to Biden Library in Delaware, I believe it was, or the University of Delaware. $70 million.
I didn't even hear that.
No, nobody's talked about that. $70 million from Communist China for his library.
Did you see stupid Trudeau and Biden? They went to one of the events in China with wearing the, you know, the same thing that the Chinese
Mao Zedong
leader wears.
Yeah, Mao shirts. Yeah, Mao shirts. Yeah. I saw it. It was hilarious.
How embarrassing! How, you know? Oh my God!
And then to rationalize it, they showed a picture. Then they showed a picture of Trump when he was wearing a dress of whoever he was visiting. So they said, "See, it's no big deal."
Except Trump would never wear a communist Chinese outfit.
A communist uniform. That's communist uniform. That, you know, hey, if you've got that picture of Trump, tweet it.
I saw it. I don't know where it went. It was just a tweet that came through. Oh, speaking of that, I sent you the links.
Great.
Check out your Twitter and see if they showed up, because I'm not real good about how that all works.
Oh, let me see. Yeah, the only thing I can do on my phone is Twitter and YouTube.
Oh.
So.
Yeah, I sent you a video I did with Trump speaking earlier that they didn't take down, but which is.
Oh,
incredible.
Yeah, great. It did come. And that's from your channel, right? The one that you sent me?
Okay, yeah, that's
so
the one they didn't
I can subscribe to your channel now. You know, you really should have given your channel out over the air unless you don't want people to follow it.
Well, it's just a irrational knee jerk not to put it out, but you're probably right.
Oh. Yeah, because a lot of people I follow, they go to YouTube, and you know that with me, I go to YouTube. I watch it all night when I can't sleep. And, and not only that, you can make money when you get so many followers, too.
Oh, yeah?
YouTube will pay.
Oh, that was the other thing.
Yeah.
That video they took down, it was never monetized, and it was unrestricted.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't even public. It's crazy now.
Oh, well, you know, that's happening to a lot of people on YouTube, conservative people on YouTube. They have if you have any more problems with them, what you want to do is you want to go on Twitter. And this is what all of the conservative YouTubers I follow have put out where they couldn't get any action. You go to Twitter and there's it's at YouTube team. So you tweet to them, say you're having a problem with the video. Well, they look into it. And I guess they're following up within 24 hours if you go that route versus trying to get in touch with them the other way.
I'll look into that for sure. Thanks.
That's
good advice.
But anyway, I'm sorry I've taken. I know you guys probably want to eat or do something, but thanks for taking my call. And yeah, I enjoyed the show, and the supply thing is getting very, very scary. I mean, you know, it's coal and it's diesel. Oh my God, can you imagine when the diesel, what happens?
Oh,
you know,
it's happening in it's already happening in some stations in North Carolina where there's no diesel, and these truckers are having to park their trucks, and it's like, how can that happen in the United States of America?
But look at all the stuff that the truckers bring. I mean, you know, it's like a total nightmare, and it's scary. And, you know, Christmas is going to be sad. But right now, I'm worried about getting things I need to live. I mean, medical supplies, you know, that's what I'm concerned about. And, you know, all these parents and being a nurse, you know, I've seen kids, you know, with the whooping cough and these different diseases. And then they, you know, made it worse by putting on these masks, and they're still going for the masks, you know.
Yep.
And how many kids are we going to lose? And then you watch the Dems come out. See, we told you, you know, and then boom, you've got another pandemic.
Yeah, and just in time for like another holiday that's coming up, upcoming. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Anyway, I'll let you guys go, let you get your meals or whatever you need. Thanks for taking my call, and great show.
Thank you. And thanks for the info on the drugs.
Thanks for listening. Yeah.
Oh, always. I can't do without my Vito and Al fix on Monday.
Better than fentanyl.
But that's addicting.
Okay, we'll just talk to you later.
All right. Take care, Sue.
Bye.
All right. Have a great week,
Sue.
Yes. Ditto that.
All right.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving.
All right, be safe. God bless you, Sue. Thank you.
All right. Bye bye.
All right, guys. Have a nice evening. Be safe out there.
Bye for now.
That's all, folks.
Thank you, Zubatar.